And this podcast brought to you by Tailwind Nutrition.
Our friends at Tailwind Nutrition, they make the best stuff.
Scott, I need to order some. Are you in on this order? Are we going to save on shipping?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go.
I think that's the tip of the trail right now. Right there is get with your running partners and buy in bulk.
Scott,
that's not the tip.
Okay, what is
the tip? Here's the tip. Carry a knife.
A knife?
A knife. Or a blade.
Are you going back to the Ashley Walsh podcast?
No. I think she carries it for self-defense. I think it's important to carry a knife when you're on a long run, maybe not on your regular training run, but a long run or even a race, have a knife handy in your drop bags so you can alter your shoes. You think that's dumb, don't you?
I do. Scott, why on earth would I want to cut my shoes?
You know, we have a Trail Runner Nation member,
yeah,
Eric, that cuts the toes of his shoes out on long races.
I suggest he buys a pair of shoes that fit, Scott.
But I did it. It was not planned, but I did a run one day in Utah up to Mount Timpanogos.
Yeah,
and I had some new shoes on. Error number one.
Yeah.
And I started getting some hot spots and some blisters on my heels. And I remembered, hey, I have a knife with me. And so I just took this new pair of shoes and I cut holes in the back of my shoes. And it saved the whole trip. I was in jeopardy of losing the summit, Don.
Scott, I will tell you, as a running partner of yours, I'm glad you have a knife. I will not be carrying one, but I will be carrying Tailwind Nutrition, because it provides me the calories that I need to have clarity in my mind so that I know when to ask you for the knife.
I like how you spun that.
I had to do something with it. It was spiraling downward.
So carry a knife and make sure that your bottles are full of Tailwind so you do not jeopardize the summit.
Tailwindnutrition.com. Harry's, Scott. When I say Harry's, what do you think?
Well, I think it's kind of a twist on words. It shouldn't be called Harry's. It should be called
Hairless.
But Harry's makes the best blades I have ever shaved with.
Scott, I've used a lot of blades.
And what do you think of these?
Well, not at one time. But I agree with you. These are sharp, long-lasting, precision instruments.
So why in the heck are we talking about Harry's on a podcast about trail running? I have a theory.
Go.
Here's my theory. In trail running, there's kind of a fad right now for beards. People have lots of beards, big, thick, nasty beards.
Rob Krar.
Yeah. And Rob Krar's beard. My theory is the reason that there are all these beards is because they have yet to try a Harry's blade.
You're telling me that these gentlemen with beards, and not to be gender specific, there may be some ladies out there with beards.
Sure.
We don't know. If they tried these razors, they would shave. They on would a regular.
Be, they would be hairless on their entire body.
Dolphins.
They would be dolphins.
With legs.
Anyway, you can go to harrys.com. Pick out whatever you want on there. I recommend the Winston set. It's a $25 package that includes a shaver, a really nice shaver, some blades, and some other stuff in there. There's a cheaper one that's $15 that's a plastic handle, but this one's like a nice metal heavy handle, really good. You can get it for $5 off if, as you check out, use the code TRN in the coupon code box. You get $5 off.
Harrys.com. Remember the coupon code TRN.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Oh, come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War.
And today on the podcast, today is a special day, Scott. It's almost as if it's the end of the year and we have saved the largest and best present for last.
Oh, it's Christmas.
Well, it is Christmas this time of the year, and we have Hal Corner with us today. And if I was to describe Hal and give him some of the accolades and some of the accomplishments, here's what we'll run off.
You know what I think of when I think of Hal Kerner? What? I think of a bearded smile.
You do? Well, yeah. I would too, because here's why he's smiling. He's an ultra-running champion. He has been victorious at Angeles Crest two separate times, Western States two separate times, the Canadian Death Race, the Javelina 100, and Hard Rock in 2010, first man to kiss the rock, including that, race director for Pine to Palm, brick and mortar building for a running store, Rogue Valley Runners. He's a blogger, he's an author, and a movie star.
He is a movie star.
Hey, welcome to the podcast, Hal.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
So do you own a tux that you have to wear when you go to the red carpet premieres of these movies you're in?
Oh, good Lord. No, we're much more laid back here in Oregon. And I think, luckily, California holds that standard somewhat, too. It's more of like an orange carpet when I show up, you know. So, yeah.
Hey, Hal, we got a hold of this book, and it's one of those that's just fun to pick up and harder to put down, because it just has a little bit of everything in it and just some good common sense things that we should all know.
Thanks, man. And that's really it. It's a lot of common sense things. Obviously, as you also probably read, those are things that I've interpreted other ways and made mountains out of molehills in some instances. So you get to read about that, which is the best part about it. I think we all need a little bit of a refresher. It reinforces some of the things we do right or we don't. When it comes down to it, and how overwhelming these events can be at times, you kind of need that. You need that common sense approach to how to handle them. And, I think that's one of the best, that's one of the best things about it. And, it's right in front of your face sometimes, so you can't ignore it.
So we're talking about his new book that was just published in 2014, Hal Kerner's Field Guide to Ultra Running. The only issue I have with this book, Hal, is you call it the field guide, but I don't know whether I could fit this in my fanny pack. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, right. I know. Well, we talked about maybe for the holidays offering some little carabiner that you clip onto your belt. I've been, it's been a point of contention with a number of folks, so you're not alone. You're not alone. I know.
Hey, there's
oversight.
There's a lot to know about our sport, and that's one of the things. This stuff's hard enough. And if you don't know what to do, or some of the tricks of the trade, if you will, it's almost impossible to do. So, information in this area is just critical.
It's gleaned over a lot of years, and I still show up at races and I don't wear my watch, or I forget my salt tablets, or it's like still a million things. I go to all these races and I still will find a way to sabotage my race. And, and even getting the book and putting it together and writing about all the things I should do was great. It was a good refresher for me, and that was pretty cool to see as well. Even though, this book is probably targeted more for the beginning ultra runner, the beginning trail runner, someone, coming to our sport, which we've seen a lot of. I think in the same breath, there's again stuff in there to keep us on our toes, true to a successful race. Yeah.
Hey, I've noticed that you must be pretty good friends with Scott Jurek, because as I read the foreword that's written by him, you got to be careful who you pick to ask to write your foreword. He laid right into you, Hal.
Yeah, I know. No, I would like to say that I think when I first met Scott, he was sitting at a table on Catalina Island with you couldn't see the table through the bottom of the beer bottles. Let's just put it that way. and that changed the second time I met him. I think he was also influenced by a few of the people that were around him. But I think he's one of the most put together people I know, hardest working people I know, really down to earth. But at the same time, he and I sometimes have the we have that influence over one another, going back and forth either way. Yeah, sometimes he knows me well, that's for sure. I think it's fun. It's a compliment sometimes we pay those kinds of jokes on each other, and it also shows that we do know each other pretty well. Yeah. I've had the chance to race against him a number of times, and a lot of hours, and hung out before and after with him. And for me, growing up and learning about the sport, that was probably one of the best ways I got a handle on it. That was super invaluable. So, yeah, I was glad to have him right before it, and really honored about that too. So,
yeah, I wish that this book was written
10 years ago.
10 years ago. I wasn't into it 10 years ago, but when I first started, I mean, and I've learned a lot from Don. Don got a few years jump start on this ultra running scene before I got into it, and I learned a lot from him. But I it's actually a fun conversation on a trail run to talk to Don and some of the things that he learned through the school of hard knocks of, wearing different kinds of equipment and just learning, handheld water bottles. It was like angels singing, stuff like that. This book, if you're thinking of getting into any kind of trail running, whether it's ultra running or, some sort of distances, this book is jam packed. It's only, less than 200 pages. I reading through it, I mean, it has just about everything that somebody needs to know, a beginner or, like you say, a veteran that needs a reminder about certain things.
Yeah. And it's really stuff that, my editor, they get questions for, other folks that I've written addendums for in other training books, question about, how should people train for ultras? What are the added things? It was questions they were getting, but then it's also the stuff I see day to day when people come into the store. And you guys are probably familiar with that too, but it's like, what do I do about this? And what do I need? Do I need this? And should I have this? And, what are the latest with the shoes? What is important about that? And, those things are all questions that, not everybody has a handle on. And when I started ultra running, like you were saying, I guess I kind of, for me, it was, I give all this credit to Ultra Running Magazine at the time, but then now I go back and think about it, like, sure, Ultra Running Magazine gave me the races that were out there and the people that were doing them, but it still didn't have the articles in it like it did today.
Yeah.
You didn't really have a whole lot of place to learn from. And so it was just a trial and error and learning from experience. And I've had plenty of that, but like I was mentioning to somebody the other day, I mean, I jumped into the sport and was doing, 10 to 15 ultras a year. And sure, I got experience that way, but most people don't have the time to do that. And most people, maybe it is just, they're going to run a 50K and that's what they want to do. That's kind of like a, knock something off the old bucket list deal, or maybe it's a 50 mile or 100 mile. And so, you don't have the time or the energy, or maybe, this book can help get you there and do it. And, it's well worth it. So it give you a little bit of idea about all those events and all those races, and which ones to plan for and which ones to peak for. Cause, I know I was pretty, naive when I entered my first ultra, and, those are, some sort of, to make the learning curve a little bit less steep, I guess. Yeah.
Hey, I'm just curious, owning a brick and mortar shoe store, running store, what is the most asked question?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it's usually like, does this shoe have a wide enough toe box? I think is like one of the things that people always love to look for when they come into the store. And I think that speaks volumes about just where shoe design has gone in the last few years. And it's in what people are asking for and the type of runner that we're getting, an 18-year-old doesn't say that, nor does like a 25-year-old. I think the sport in general, it has, the demographic is the curve on the age is a little bit on the downslope.
Yeah.
And so it just shows that where we all are, people are looking for, they're looking for a cushioned shoe, and I tend to say like, we'll get you cushioned shoes and we'll get you shoes with wide forefoot. But, if I were you, I'd start running on trails, and I think that's good for a lot of people as well. And then for us, where we are in this area, it is like a lot of guiding people, onto the right trail and where's a cool place to go run, which is great as well. you know, and then there's the gamut of all the other usual questions, I think, too. You know, how long shoes last for, talking about socks, you know, getting the right, you know, getting the right size of sock, getting the right technical sock for people as well. I think, you know, when you add it up, like you guys know, you get the right shoe and you get the right socks, you don't need a whole lot else to be, you know, a runner and to go out and set yourself free. Although I've got a whole store of stuff I'd like to tell you as well.
Yeah. There's a gear section, a gear chapter in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Hal, I don't even know if this is a question or not. I'm just going to put out some words, and perhaps at the end of it, there'll
just
be a question.
Raise your voice at the end.
Okay. Then you'll know that's when I'm done.
Hey, I'll try.
So who's leading the way with shoe design? Are the shoe design companies changing shoes and we're following? Is the are the runners out there asking for different design and shoe companies are responding to that request? Who's leading who around here?
Oh, that's a great question. No, I think, it's a little bit of, in some ways, I think the consumer asked for something, you know, a change in this, a change in that. They saw one of the shoe companies sell one shoe do extremely well. And then what happens is the other shoe companies then all try to replicate that shoe. I think we see a lot of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing is that, you know, there are a lot of people out there testing those shoes and there are a lot of people out there running in those shoes. And so then they get tinkered with a little bit here and there. And I think that that's where it gets finely tuned on the consumer end of things. But if, you know, I've got a SKU, you know, my wall is filled with all these SKUs of shoes, but there's like one or two that are just killing it. Everybody sees those trends. You know, we see the data on that really quickly. So do the other shoe manufacturers. And then right away it's like, well, we need our shoe in that silo, or we need our shoe. If we don't even have a shoe comparable to that, we need one in that market. And then you see more and more offerings in that, you know, down that path. And so that's where I guess the consumer wins. Then they get a broader choice of shoes to choose from. And depending on who's making it and what, you know, where the, you know, the, I guess the technical abilities of that shoe manufacturer and how quick they can make it and what materials they have, you know, that's where, you know, you're getting your really, you know, dialed in shoes that people love. Or maybe you hit a home run like the Brooks Cascadia or something like that. And then, you know, it's just everybody chases that shoe for the last 10 years and nobody can do it. You know, it's one of those things too. But there's a lot of new things out there and I think that's fun to watch as well. I was just at the running event and, you know, with the rise of Hoka and even, you know, and even where Altra is with a bigger shoe, you know, a higher stack height shoe, a cushion shoe, you're seeing a lot of the other companies are now offering that style of shoe. So more cushion, you know, and, great feel is really the, you know, that's the name of the game now. Whereas a couple of years ago, it was like the complete opposite. You were, you know, we were looking at really, you know, low drops and close shoes to the ground and even barefoot shoes. So it's interesting to see the swing and where things are right now. But what shoe companies have been able to do in the last year or two to minimize costs in China, and to minimize maybe even the environmental costs of shoe manufacturing on the world scale, I think what they're doing is really pretty amazing. And I think, you know, between the fabrics and the applications and the construction, that's really where I see shoes going. And it's really exciting to watch. Yeah, it's so high tech, so polished now that they blow my mind. They actually are probably worth $150, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to say that, but it's, you know. And that's probably more a reality than a shock as we go forward. I don't know.
You know, Scott and I have had this discussion, and I don't think we ended up with an answer. And you have the option of passing on this question because, you know, heck, it could put you in trouble. So here's the question.
Yeah.
How important is it for a shoe brand or manufacturer to have an elite athlete or team attached to it for their success of their product?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's pretty invaluable. Where I see it coming from is like we're kind of the foot soldiers. I've always seen that, you know, somebody more relatable than a great big corporation to the average everyday person. I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, it's just like how I look at, I don't know, some days I look at how I can relate to a product better through another person that maybe I look up to, or maybe I aspire to, or that I find, you know, as a genuine person, I'm more apt to be, you know, more receptive to whatever it is they're selling or whatever it is they like. And I think that's important. And then the other way back, I think it's really important for us to be out there talking to consumers. You know, you don't get, not everybody runs 500 miles in a shoe in 4 weeks. You know, it's hard to find somebody that's getting good, giving good feedback to these companies on what we really want. Or sometimes it's not just one person, you know, on an, you know, and one athlete, you know, coming back to a design company, maybe it's 10 athletes that you can finally get a consensus for something and say, wow, they're all saying we need to go this route with a shoe. And sometimes you have to bark really loud to get changes to happen away from just industry standards. And I think that's where athletes, where that works as well. Plus, that's exciting. You know, I kind of relate it back to one of the things I like to watch is like car racing, you know, and you look at do car companies need racing teams and how many people really check that out. But at the end of the day, you know, they're out there testing it. That's kind of the exciting thing. That's kind of the, you know, what a lot of people look to. And then hopefully it relates back to sales for the manufacturer. And it keeps manufacturers authentic. You know, as a running store owner, mm-hmm. I want runners out at, you know, my local races wearing my bib, running in, you know, our clothing or our shoes. And that's exciting. And people say, wow, that's, you know, I think it's influential in that way. Or, you know, I want people out there doing, you know, fundraisers. I want people out there in the watershed working on, you know, trails, and being just, overall general ambassadors to, you know, our community. I think that when you lose that, you lose at least a company that I'm invested in or interested in, that's for sure.
You know, I want to put a...
I hope that answers that question.
Absolutely. You know, I put a quick plug in. The store that we're talking about that Hal owns is called Rogue Valley Runners in Ashland, Oregon. They have a pretty good website. If you're ever up there, you guys do a normal, looks like you do a Tuesday evening run every weekly?
We do a Tuesday. Now we do a Tuesday evening over 40 group run. And then Wednesday, we do our regular group run at 5:30. Both are at 5:30. Our 5:30 run just became, it's a little bit different because obviously you have to fold into our trails up here, and they're pretty steep, and it's trail running. And, you know, the group that we got here now, it's like everybody's come a long, wrong way. You know, I've had, and it's open for anyone, but it seems like we got this really party group and enthusiastic group out there. They like to tackle just about all that, you know, the immediate area has to offer. And so, you know, we're always into having new people, all different abilities. And, you know, we just meet up every mile or two. We meet up at a section where we turn or whatever we're doing. Everybody's super cool with that. But they push themselves in between those, you know, even though it's somewhat social, that some people are pushing themselves, some people aren't. So we opened up a Tuesday night run, maybe a little more laid back to cater to some of the folks in the area as well. But it's a great way to get out, you know, here with what we have to offer, you know, and then just like every other thing, you know, build friendships and bonds and people who come to the races and, you know, volunteer at races. And then, yeah, we go out on Wednesday night, we go get pizza and beer afterwards. And it's like it's what I look forward to every week. You bet.
You know, there's a lot that we can talk about on this podcast with Hal. I mean, he seems like he's super busy doing all these different projects. But one that I'm excited to talk about is the film that you're out promoting. It's a friend of the nation, J.B. Benna's film production company, Journey Films Production, called The Long Haul, which talks about and chronographs your trek, fastest known time, with Mike Wolf of the John Muir Trail. And if you're not familiar with the John Muir Trail, it's probably, I think it could be, there are many that could argue that the John Muir Trail is the most beautiful trail in the United States. It covers about 220 some odd miles that goes through three national forests. And back last year, Hal and Mike laced up their shoes and said, we're going to try the fastest known time here, supported fastest known time on the trail. And that's what this film is all about.
Yeah, Yeah, and it's I wish I'd known a little bit more about the John Muir Trail too before I went and did it.
You know, actually,
we might not be having this conversation.
That is one of my first questions. I mean, had you ever hiked the John Muir Trail before?
No, I knew nothing about it. And honestly, for 10 years of my ultra running career, I kind of just wanted to get to like the Bishop High Sierra races because I'd always wanted to race down there and get in that area of the, you know, country and then go up Mount Whitney and, you know, see all the, you know, see all the mountains that, you know, area contains. And it's just kind of like, dang it, how do we make this happen? And I remember sitting around with Mike and I was like, we just have to make this happen. And so let's go run the John Muir Trail, you know, and it just was one of those things where, yeah, and it made it was just a better excuse to make it happen for us. And otherwise, you know, it's a long way from anywhere, at least for wherever I've lived. And so it's nice to be able to get down there. And so sure, I mean, we did some beta on it and a lot of that was just looking at splits of the other runners who had been down there, but also hearing from other people that, you know, this is just iconic. This is just 200 plus miles of single track, doesn't cross a road ever. You're in the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful. There's just constant views. There's nothing stale ever, you know, and I was like, well, we have to just do this. And so that was really kind of the impetus for us to get down there. And you hear the stories and other friends had gone down and tried record attempts. And I knew a lot of the other people that had gone and either held the record or, you know, had completed the trail. So, and we get a lot of PCT through hikers in this area too. Ashland is a main stop, as people come through and then you just hear about it. And I was like, I just have to make this happen. And you know, and people ask like, oh, I can't believe you did it in this amount of time. You didn't enjoy it, blah, blah, blah. But that's how we enjoy things. That's how Mike and I, you know, that's what we do. And that was kind of how we really enjoyed it. And I don't, who's to say that going and backpacking it and hiking it, you know, would be more enjoyable for us? I don't know if it would, you know, and that's funny that, you know, it's just to each their own. And this is the way we wanted to do it. And we did it very minimally. But at the same time, it was quite a, you know, it was a max effort for us. And I don't know, even last month, Mike had surgery on his ankles, one ankle. It was kind of a direct reflection out of coming out of this endeavor. And then unfortunately, I was hobbled. I've had a metatarsal problem since that time last year. You'll see in the film where I'm dealing with it, but something I hadn't dealt with. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't shake it. And I finally am getting either a broken or bruised metatarsal that got shifted out of place, for almost a year while I tried to continue to run on it. So it was an effort without a doubt. And I think this movie chronicles that really well. It goes into the backstory, about the trail, the other people who have completed it, held the records. You have Brett Monet's testimonial and Sue Johnson's testimonial and, a few other folks that really, you know, I think, you know, bring the whole thing together. JB did a nice job of getting all those pieces to come together. And probably the hardest job he had was dealing with the footage, you know, because we had a GoPro out there and we had an iPhone. And one of the jokes we tried to tell people was we had the GoPros and did the whole deal, but they were in a waterproof case. So when all the footage eventually got to JB, there's no microphone. It's all mumbled. Oh. And some of the crux moments with Mike, you know, and when we didn't have crew and we ran out of food and water for what was almost a day was, you know, he's kind of reflecting into the camera and you can't even hear what he's saying.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, around that and the other things, JV just spun this great movie. And I think it's inspirational, just like you guys saw in Unbreakable and, you know, has a story and then maybe hopefully what you'll see when he completes his Hard Rock picture, you know, so I think it's just, and there's not enough out there, for kind of, you know, what we do and what we love to, you know, get us inspired. There's not enough movies out there like that. So I'm just psyched that JB went and took the time and put it out there in the effort. Yeah, it's great. And it's been, yeah, it's screening right now and, kind of a limited number of places, you know, in some big markets. But it's open for screening wherever anybody wants to do it. And actually, it's not that big of a, JB doesn't put out a big price on that. I mean, I just found out that to try to rent a place around here to house the amount of people, you know, like three or four times the amount of the screening cost, you know, so which is kind of wild considering how much time it takes JB to put together one of these things. But no, it's really good. You guys would love it. I'm sure you'll eventually get to see it.
Yeah,
you
know, where do we find, is there a listing? I know that I looked on Journey Films' website and there wasn't any listing. Where do we find out where the screenings are happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. I haven't, you know, I know that there's going to be one in Seattle this Friday. I'm going to do one in Bend at Rod Bean's Patagonia store on the 6th of January. And I'm going to try to get the screening out to a couple of places. I'm trying to get it up into Missoula. But no, it was kind of just relying on inquiries to his website. And I know he had about 20 of them.
Okay.
So that's kind of where that goes from there. And then it's really just, I mean, we each become our own little grassroots promoter, trying to put it out to our local communities, you know, if you really want to see it, or if, you know, somewhere down the road, you wait for it to come out on DVD or download it or what have you. But as we all know, it's so much greater to get together with a group of friends.
Yeah.
You know, go watch something like this and have a few beers and talk about it.
We actually sat behind you at the screening of Unbreakable at the sports basement.
In
San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that was a hoot.
It was like watching watch a home video.
It was actually very funny because we were sitting right behind you guys, and you guys were just having a ball chatting with each other.
I think I was busting Tony's chops and yeah, what have you.
Yeah,
I know. It's awesome to be able to, I mean, not for me so much to be able to live that race, but to be able to watch those guys on the screen do it, and the way that race unfolded on that day was so... Just amazing. So epic. It was fantastic.
Wasn't that an amazing finish by Jeff? I mean, Anton didn't break down at all. He was running strong all the way through, and then something just came over Jeff. Just unbelievable.
Supernatural.
Oh, wow.
Well, and that's it. You know, it's like people say, 90% of ultraning is mental, and the other 10%, that's mental, too. It really shows, you know, the power of the mind, without a doubt. Yeah.
You know, JB is such a great storyteller, and I think that is sounds real encouraging and a lot of fun if in fact it's open to people to create their own showing or viewing, if they could contact, get the price, what it involves to put their own community together and show this movie. I think that's a great idea.
Oh yeah,
we may have just created
just
a whole lot of work for
JB.
JB, if this wasn't part of your program, sorry we said this.
We'll give his personal email out.
No, he'd probably love that. Head over to Journey Film and get in contact with him. But no, it started out, we did it as a speaker series thing with the North Face. You know, it started out as like a 25, 26 minute piece. You know, it just was something to talk about and to get the Q&As going and to highlight what we did and highlight the trail more or less and get people psyched on trail running in the mountains in California and et cetera, et cetera. But then now it's up to about 37 minutes and it's polished with, you know, it became a little more robust with all these other interviews. And now it's a quality piece that, it's worth getting the crew together for. You bet.
You were talking about your journey on the Jarmier Trail. What were some of the people, I mean, I'd have to ask this question. What were some of the backpackers, you know, who take typically 2 to 3 weeks to complete this thing? And you guys say, you know, excuse me, on your left, and you're running through, you know, super light. What were some of the comments that you heard?
One of the most amazing things was how many people knew that we were going to be on the trail before we even did it, you know,
cool.
Or like we'd
really?
Be out there and they'd be like, oh, we've heard about you guys. And they'd be like, really? You have? Like, I mean, I didn't tell too many people, but it was interesting. People were intrigued for sure. Some people had opinions one way or the other. We had some folks that, you know, we'd be heading by and they're like, hey, you're those two guys. Like they would be over camping. They're like, well, you probably don't have this kind of time to stop to talk to us. Do you, you know, blah, blah, blah. More along the lines of, no, not really. You know, if we stopped to talk to everybody, you know, there's no way you could capture the record of the number of people that are out there that wanted to chat. And that was really the thing that blew me away was how many folks were on the trail. It was unbelievable. And it almost got to the point where just passing people and saying hello or on your right became, I don't know, it was almost, it was almost another added variable that I really wasn't ready for, you know, and people did want to say hello and you did want to say hi, but you know, you kind of got your head down, you're working really hard. It was difficult to be able to do that. And you may think I'm exaggerating, but I'm really not. And that was really the amazing thing. And I think that this was all in the heels of, you know, Wild and the book, Cheryl Strayed had out there. And I know that that summer, the PCT had like the jump in hikers was like through the roof, and especially through that section. But people were generally pretty okay with it. You know, I think we had a few people that probably, I remember one lady, if you're going up Muir Pass, and you know, it was just like, you know, you'd only slept for 2 hours the night before, and we were well into the journey, you know, and you're well into it. And we were going up that path and it just kept going on and on. I remember Mike and I are struggling in the heat going up, and a lady was just kind of coming downhill. You know, she'd been descending for whatever amount of time, and she went around Mike. I think she asked him a question, but I think he kind of mumbled it back because he was beat, you know, and he was worn out. And she said, I think she had a really rude response back, like, wow, no, no, you don't have to respond to me, and blah, 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 this, and blah, 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 that. And it was just a moment where we pass every day, everybody in general life, every day on the street or at the store, you know, when you're around all these people and no one cares to say hello to anybody. But it's funny how on that trail you feel, you know, people feel entitled to a hello and a conversation and what are you doing? That was pretty interesting to me too, which I genuinely, you know, there's like this fraternity of people that's fine with me, but it was just interesting that it became almost, what's the word I'm looking for? It just, there was this tension between people at times, which is kind of interesting. Huh. But in general, it was funny too. We met two or three folks out there who knew exactly who we were and wanted pictures taken with us. And, you know, that just, reinforced why we were out there, at least for, you know, it just gave us a good feeling and, you know, made us feel good that, you know, some people were taking note of it as it was happening. So,
You needed a pacer up front saying, you know, kind of like at the golfing thing, they have somebody holding the sign, quiet, please. You know, coming up is our Hal and Mike, and we're going to let them go past, you know.
So, yeah, right.
Hey, I have a question. Were these people that were hiking, were they essentially some mobile aid stations? Did they offer up a cliff bar or some water? I mean, I think I would, that's what I would do.
Especially that day that you guys ran out, you missed your aid station.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy thing, actually. Up to that point, you know, people we would pass, you could definitely tell were hikers that, you know, wanted to get rid of food. And there were a lot like, hey, do you guys want sandwiches? Do you want this and that from the side of the trail? And we'd be fine with whatever you're doing. I mean, when you're working that hard at 11,000 feet constantly, food doesn't always sound like the greatest thing, you know, while you're on the move. Yeah. And my stomach was trying to acclimate, you know, the entire time. It wasn't a great thing. But the funny thing was when we missed our stop and people said, yeah, you missed it. We almost sped up and like ignored all those people that we were seeing because it was a huge wave early in the morning that were coming up out of there. And then it was like, dang, all those guys are gone. Yeah, we should have asked them for something. And then when we were stranded down there, like a guy on a carrying a pack train of horses had all these supplies, which we surmised where he was taking to camp somewhere, and he said, yeah, you missed your guy, he's probably 4 miles down around the lake by now. And we weren't going the lake way, and we were trying to decide how much time out of the way we should go do this, or should we, you know, what if nothing ever becomes of it and I can't get back here, you know, that's just hours upon hours upon hours, you know, and blah blah blah. And then the guy said, nope, you missed him. And then it was like, well, do you have anything? Mike goes, well, do you have anything you can give us? And the guy goes, nope, sorry about that. And he just rode off three horses for all this stuff, right? And then, which was crazy, and then finally when we pulled the trigger, and I was like, we're just going on, Mike. And we started up the next pass, we passed him, you know, and he was up there, and he goes, oh, I thought you guys would have quit for sure. You know, and that was the only thing he gave us back. So it's kind of one of those moments where either he didn't like what we were doing out there, or wasn't willing to offer anything up, or didn't feel that, you know, the situation we were in was that dire. It was kind of strange. And I'm also a person, you know, I think you'll see in the movie when we finally do get to JB, we definitely look a lot more out of it than I think I felt at the time. But it wouldn't have taken much more time for us to make sure that, you know, somebody would have had to have done something to help us, or else we wouldn't have been going anywhere out of there. We would have been a liability for sure. Yeah, it was weird.
Hey, how important was it, or what kind of advantages or disadvantages was to have a partner going through this trip?
Yeah. Well, you talk to people afterwards, and it definitely is doing a attempt like this, it's probably a great big disadvantage, from the sense that anything you do or any, you know, normal tasks, they're kind of doubled. You know, when you stop to get water, it's doubled. when somebody goes to the bathroom, it's doubled. You know, the stop, I'll stop for you, wait for you, catch back up for you, then you do it. You know, all those things get doubled. From the standpoint of making it enjoyable and why I would even want to go do it and experience it, I'd rather have someone else to share that journey with. You know, when I did the Colorado Trail with my buddy Ian Torrance in 2003, that was the whole reason for that too. And maybe even for me, it was, yeah, that's, you know, it was part of my desire, you know, what my determination, what got me even thinking about it was, hey, I don't want to go do this by myself. I'd rather do it with somebody else. So in that regard, it's almost invaluable, you know, what doing it with someone else means. Looking back on it in the future, having someone to talk about, you know, the adventure with and the journey with, you know, and we're both like 60 and maybe we can't run anymore. That'll be really cool too, because someone else will know what that was like when we did it. It won't just be me making up stories about the amazing time I had and how fast I was. But it's difficult in that regard as well. You know, the trail is already hard enough. And then, you know, sometimes when you're feeling really good, obviously the other guy isn't feeling really good. So you're only as fast as, you know, the slowest person, right. That old adage, but at the same time, it's hard to say. There were definitely moments where I was more, I was more pushed along the trail by how well he was doing. And probably vice versa. Like you see somebody else and you're like, okay, I'm going to just keep pushing then and pushing. And how to weigh those one way or another. And I told somebody else, I think at the screening we had the other night on a question was, yeah, and you just don't know. Maybe you would have pushed yourself too hard. Maybe, you know, those extra minutes of stopping are what you needed to keep going at the pace you were going at, you know? So it's hard to say that, you know, it's one that you weigh back and forth a lot of, you know, a lot of the instances about, you know, whether it's better or for worse, you know, going at it with a partner. So it's tough. I definitely think Mike was the right guy. And it was interesting how the toll of the miles, the cumulative sleep deprivation, how that all added up, you know, with the little bit of injuries that we both had. And even on the last day, I had like a bloody nose for, you know, it's like more than 6 hours and dealing with that. And Mike always having to wait for me. And then at the same time, his shin kept growing worse and worse and worse and him having to slow down to the point where, you know, maybe it would have been better had we been going a little faster. I don't know, you know, with the diminishing, you know, at least his diminishing performance was concerned. And then me feeling better when my bloody nose finally stopped, you know. So, yeah, you're always dealing with something in an attempt like this. And we were lucky at the time to be able to grab that record, you know, whatever record it was, you know, two people supported going for the overall time. You know, it was still kind of a abstract record at the time, but, you know, it was something that pushed us for sure. And hopefully pushed Lior when he went for it. You know, that was the time then that he was shooting for, and, you know, he was able to grab that record. So I'm happy that, you know, it was good for something for sure. Yeah.
You talk about sharing the experience. How many items or details did you share back and forth? You go, I totally forgot about that. Had you not mentioned it, I never would have recalled that about that trip.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I'm trying to think about what it is, but yeah, I remember when somebody was talking about, like, did you listen to music? And I was like, I always listen to music, but I didn't listen to music at all on this trip until like we were at our darkest moment. I remember Mike saying something like, hey, can you play your music out loud? And like 5 minutes later, he's like, is this the only music you have to listen to? That's like one of those things where he definitely didn't have the same taste in music at that moment, you know, with what was going to get us through. But I completely forgot about that because I just didn't remember music being a part of our journey. And then I remember, oh yeah, we were having a great time then. You know, it's like one of those moments. And it brought back, like, you know, pretty crystal clear, like 10 miles of trail that otherwise you kind of put out of your mind, you know. Those tough sections of trail sometimes you don't always remember the most.
Yeah. How you've won Hard Rock, and Don and I just went out this last summer and got to firsthand experience a little bit of that trail and watch the race unfold over there. How 100 miles of Hard Rock, high altitude, lots of giant peaks versus John Muir Trail, double the distance, lots of high mountainous peaks. Which is compare and contrast.
Nice.
Yeah, they both have their pluses and minuses on that scale. Hard Rock, when you can wrap your mind around doing something in a day, And I'm so experienced on the racing side of things and racing against people, although that's kind of more of a difficulty that you have that. It's kind of also better, too. You're getting pushed by all those other racers. Mm-hmm. Hard Rock, yeah, people say it's not just, you know, John Muir Trail is not just two hard rocks. It's, like, infinitely harder than that. You know, mm-hmm. it feels like it. Even though you get to go, you know, at the pace we were going and the pace we decided we want to go out and how we were pushing ourselves at John Muir Trail, you get to, you know, it's like people say, it's like, it's less than 3 miles an hour. Anyone could do that. I remember, like, someone put on a blog after the John Muir Trail thing. He's like, that's 2.7. And some guy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is saying, like, I could go out there and do 2.7 miles an hour. I'm like, no, you yeah. cannot. That's why no one else has
yeah.
done it.
Yeah, that's why there's so many people that are putting up those kind of times, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And it's kind of one of the things, though, you do get the luxury of this, you know, and Mike and I went into it kind of the same way. I was like, hey, it's not like I'm going all out like at Hard Rock, you know, like I'm redlining all the time. We get to step back a little bit and you know, gear down a little bit, if you will. But at the same time, it's the overwhelmingness of it, and then the passes, and then the unrunnable terrain. Hard Rock, for what it's worth, is there's a lot of dirt road at Hard Rock, you know, up or down. That, you know, if you're fit and in a 100-mile race, you can move on it, you know. And even the technical nature of Hard Rock, as Killian showed rather well, you know, is, you know, that's subjective as well. I think the John Muir Trail, on the other hand, there's no faking that either. So it's in a class of its own. Yeah.
Hey, Hal, let's crack open your book for a second, if you don't
yeah.
mind. The great thing about the book is you can open up any page and just start reading and pick yeah. out a subject. And one of the ones that caught my eye that I don't think we hear enough about, and I think it would just be a good service to talk about, is passing on a single track. And you lay yeah. out some of the details on that. And I think with all the new runners that are coming in, and some yeah. of us that may be losing our hearing, that we need...
Hey, come on. Was that a jab
no,
at me?
No, that's really to me.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That we need to talk about that a little bit. What is the etiquette? Well, what's right?
Right. And I remember looking that over again myself and thinking it probably was a little too slim of an entry. You know, we discussed, like, kind of like you're, you know, when you're bike riding, it's something you want to be able to declare to people, hey, I'm coming up, I'm on your left, blah, blah, blah. And like you mentioned, it's hard now. I mean, you want to be assertive and you want to tell people they're coming and you want to do it at the right place in the trail. You know, just because you came up on somebody somewhere doesn't mean they need to get over for you right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good point.
And that was something I wish I'd probably put in a little bit more, is the fact that, yeah, it's like, it's a 100-mile race, or it's a 50K, or it's a 50-mile race. There's plenty of time for you to conserve your energy, keep it laid back, because you don't want to burn energy getting around someone. And I've done that in a race where I came up on somebody and felt great, and then worried about getting around, and then, like, did something stupid to get around them that took all this energy that, you know, then I was going slower than the person I just passed, which people will do. So you need to pick and choose it a little bit better and figure out where's a good part in the trail to be able to have that happen, you know, to be courteous to the runner that's in front of you. And to realize that, you know, we're all, I mean, I know we all get caught up in the moment, but we're all out there for this long journey, and you don't want to get anyone else, you don't want to injure yourself, and you certainly don't want to get anyone else injured by, you know, just being goofy, you know, trying to get around someone. And then that's also the tricky thing. I think my wife was just telling me at the North Face Endurance Challenge, was on the out and back there. You know, you get in those beautiful sceneries and settings, and it's a single track trail, and you got people coming at you both ways, or you're trying to pass and people are coming at you. You know, it gets really difficult, and you just have to ask yourself, is it worth it that much now to get around somebody, you know, or am I just conserving energy? Am I maintaining a pace that's decent until, you know, I get to somewhere where it's easier to pass, and then, you know, I still have 20 miles to go in this race kind of deal. You know, how much is this slowing me down?
Right.
But it's also hard too. I think people need to understand that people will be passing you. Yeah, the headphones thing is very hard too, because, you know, I wear headphones and I try to be courteous, and I mean, come on, fellas, not that many people pass me, but, no, I totally joke. But at the same time, when I'm coming up on other people, or I think the other people are passing me, I always take one headphone out, or I keep the yeah. music down a little bit more. And that's hard too, because sometimes it's unexpected, you know, when people are ready to pass you, or, you know, or something's coming at you the other way, you need to be alert. And that's for your own safety's sake as well. So it's like letting people know that, how do you pass? And I think it does come down to common sense, you know, be courteous. You know, I'd like to think I got into trail running. I got into ultra running because it's more of a family setting. You're around people, you know, you're training with, around people in your community, people you're going to see all the time. You don't want to piss people off. You know, you don't want to go to the next ultra because everybody will be at that next ultra. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be somebody that is seen as being rude on the trail or this and that. We're out there as a family, and you just want to be courteous to the next person about, you know, and make the experience, you know, something that's worthwhile for everybody. So I hope that answers some of your question on how that's done. But, you know, I always just try to get, I've also really scared people, you know, when I go around them. You know, I've had people that are at mile 70 or 80 and 100 mile when I do some of these loop courses before. Like, people are, you also have to understand, people are out of it. You know, people are like so rock, you know, so laser focused that they don't know you're coming up behind them, or, you know, they're in their own pain cave, and that's hard too. So I try to let people know with much of advance, and I've even placed my hand on a shoulder on somebody when I'm going around, if, you know, if I'm feeling that much better or that much more nimble than somebody else, you know. So you have to be careful with how you approach people too. But I have scared some people half to death coming up on them in the night, you know, and trying to get around them. So you have to be, yeah, you have to be aware of that too, and courteous. So again,
the pain cave. I'm gonna
yeah.
I'm gonna use that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's okay to ask somebody to pass. I mean, sometimes people you know, kind of stay behind and you're afraid to ask, but it's not being not, it's not that you're not courteous or a good trail brother or sister. It's okay to move around somebody. But to your point,
I think it is. Yeah.
But to your point, there are better places to pass than others. And if you're strategic and you kind of pace yourself, and you might hang back a little bit and conserve a little bit and then move forward and use your energies properly, because you know there's a little bit wider section. So, mm-hmm. And not get so hung up. You're right. If it's a 50K, 50 mile, you know, you name the distance, that's a lot of racing to do. And it doesn't have to happen all at once. And there's a good chance you two are going to trade places one or two times through this race. So you better do it right.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, the guy that or gal that you're passing is eventually going to be passing you at some point. Just put on your music right now, because you probably don't have this issue. But for the rest of us that are mid-pack, back of the pack, we're
trade
trading.
Spots. Yeah.
Yeah, so you got what comes around goes around is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because some people believe, like, oh, I've earned this spot, you'll have to take it from me, which is kind of more of a racing mentality. I get that. But even for me, I mean, I've been up at the front of the pack with guys I totally respect, you know, and the moment someone comes up on them, they'll be like, hey, you let me know when you want a round, you know, I'll get over.
Yep.
You know, it just comes to that point. You know what your limitations are. You know where people are. And these are guys that, you know, at other races would have destroyed me. And just at some weird reason, I've come up on them. It's like, you know, everybody's, I just think, yeah, it comes back to being courteous, and
you know,
that's on all levels.
And I think you touched on a very important part. You know, I know that when people are coming up on me, which happens a lot, you feel a little anxiety. And so I don't mind saying, you know, inviting them, say, hey, you tell me when you're ready to pass and I'll pull over.
Yeah.
I think that's, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
So who has...
that's a good question.
Who has the right of way? The person in front or behind?
Yeah, that's a great question,
well,
too. I would
the strongest
person.
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah, the person in front, because they're leading.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the person with the most mojo at the time, you know? Yeah. They're the ones that I ultimately have the right of way, I think. Hey, so you advocate wearing women's watches. True?
What?
Yeah.
I didn't read that part.
Yeah. No, right. I only came around to that because all the guys at the store here love doing that as well. They loved buying all our Timex women's watches because they were so lightweight and thin, and, you know, you didn't feel like, well, it's kind of funny. It's like the antithesis now of, like, all these GPS watches and, you know, all this stuff, and, you know, these wristwatch computers that you have that you're carrying around. It's like, it's kind of a throwback reaction to that. And so I kind of enjoyed putting that in the book, you know, just something that, you know, helps with, you know, and sometimes on race day, you know, some people want to see that mileage. They want to know where they are. They, you know, the alarms, the alerts, they want to see the elevation gain, which I can appreciate sometimes. And then other times I don't have anything to do with that, depending on my run. So, you know, maybe just a ladies, to the lightweight watch that gives you some time, that gives you, you know, some idea of when you should be fueling.
How much weight are you actually saving by going to a woman's watch? Really?
Well, that's true. It just gives some sort of, it just gives a little bit of, I think it gives some balance to that and the new watches that are out there now, which honestly, some of these great big watches you carry around, they do bother me after a while at 100-mile rate.
Hey, but I imagine you sell some at the store. You can't be too down on those nice big wrist held computers.
Yeah, they're like three or 400 times as much money.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, you've got some great training plans in this book too. So as you go through all the tips and topics, you also include some plans for the various distances.
Yeah.
For the races, and I think that's very valuable.
Yeah, and they're. You know, I think there are a lot of the things I would have used, and, you know, it's hard putting into a book something you want to be that general, but at the same time, I thought they were kind of realistic. You know, I know not everybody is like me or some other folks who have a lot more time. You know, you have to, like, be able to balance work and life and your play with what you want to do. Sometimes I have those in a little different priority than other people, so... but I thought that this was realistic. I thought it would be able to get you to the event, through the event, and happy and pleased and also healthy. And so, you know, for me, you know, I thought that was a big, I thought that was one of the big things, being able to say, hey, you know, I came out of this pretty well. The recovery went well. I don't feel like crap, and I want to do it again. And that was really... That was important for me to have, at least have the due diligence. You know, you've done the due diligence and you've done the hard work to where you went into it prepared enough that these things didn't break somebody down enough to where they thought, wow, this is really overwhelming. And also to give people a real, you know, sense of, you know, what it takes to do something like this. And I've said it before, 100 milers are not for everybody. And even the lesser distances probably too aren't for everybody. So, you know, you have to know going in that this is for you. This is the amount of work I need to put in. And but at the same time, that's really part of the achievement. And that's what you get to say, you know, you were able to do. And, I mean, I think the training should be just as fun as the race. So, yeah, I hope through the training plans, they're a progressive build with, you know, a lot of some weeks, you know, laying off a little bit to get that recovery back. But just like everything in the book, you know, here are some ideas, here are some other ideas, and take what you will from it, but just know that, you know, these worked for me, but on the flip side of things, maybe this works better for you. And I think that that's really, you know, what I want people to gain from the book as well, and just get some sense of understanding and a nice baseline or some balance out of it. So, yeah, I thought we did a nice job thinking about what, you know, what that is. And the world has become a lot better. The internet has become pretty handy with all these things, but I still think there's a lack of what you should do to run 100 miles. People are always, everybody's a little bit different. It's, you know, not all the best training is out there, and it's not out there in a distinct way, say for, you know, something like an ultra. So, you know, barring going, getting a coach, you know, this is a resource.
Yes, so 8 chapters in the book, and as you thumb through the book, you try to decide, you know, is it for me? Is it not for me? Is it a gift for somebody? You know, what is this? And I'll just read through chapter 7. I'm not going to start at the beginning of chapter 7 and read it to you, but in the table of contents, just listen to the types of things that he covers. Traveling to your race, warming up before for the race, preparing your crew and pacers, checking the rule for crews, pacers, what makes a good pacer, muling, should I go alone? Drop bags, fueling and hydration, fluid, monitoring weight loss during a race, pace on race day, top 10 must-dos on race day, and top 10 do-nots on race day. And that's just halfway through the chapter. It's just full of good stuff.
Those do's and don'ts on race day, those were fun to read.
Yeah. There could be 20 probably, but yeah. Those are some big ones.
Hal, we could have a podcast for an hour on each chapter. You know, it's that good. We appreciate the resource, I'm excited to dive even deeper. I didn't quite finish the book before the podcast, but I'm looking forward to finishing it and maybe putting it somehow attaching a carabiner to it so I can attach it to my pack.
We got it on what, Amazon.com, Scott? Is that
Yeah, that's where we got it. Yeah.
Where would you recommend going for Hal Korner's Field Guide to Ultra Running, Training for an Ultra Marathon from 50K to 100 Miles and Beyond, written by Hal Korner and Adam W. Chase?
Where do you want to direct them, Hal?
Oh, you can go anywhere. You can go to VeloPress. You can go to Amazon. If you go to my website at Roadrunner Runners, we have a shop, and you can get an autographed copy.
Oh, go there. Go
that's
there.
One way to do it, too. Yeah. And, you know, now I don't know what to tell you guys, but if you just – I have it on iBooks on my phone, too. So it's a little more handy right there, too, although – I know it's not
that makes it more
the ideal field resource.
That makes it a little more like a field guide.
Yeah.
I'm getting a blister. What do I do?
Then I can you know, just look real quick and see, you know, I'm vomiting. How should I do that properly?
Dry heaving.
So if you're ever in Ashland, Oregon, go check out Rogue Valley Runners. You can check them out online also. Hal, what races are you directing? What races can people sign up to come see you direct?
Yeah, we do a small benefit here for the Ashland Women's Trails Association in March called the Tarn Trail 6 Miler. Great, local, fun. People come from Portland, San Francisco to run it, actually. And then our two big races, Pine to Palm has become our destination event by far. It's classic point-to-point through the Siskiyous. You go from the tiny town of Williams, which isn't much of a town. If you blink, you're through it, to Ashland. Which is fantastic. And we just have a great event. I think for me, it's what I always wanted in a kind of bare bones feel. You know, you against the course out in the middle of nowhere, you relying on yourself through this isolated area we live in. It just, you know, kind of a rawness that you get, from 100 milers, you know, that introspectively and, you know, out there that I really enjoy. That's Pine to Palm. We really take care of you though. It's a great event. That's in September. It'll be the 12th and 13th this year. So if you don't get an Wasatch or you're looking for something else over the summer, or you need a qualifier for Western States, come up here and see us. It's not that far from the Bay Area. It's not that far from Portland. It's easy to get to from, you know, flying into Medford here. And then we put on a trail marathon a month later, the first weekend in November, the Lithia Loop Trail Marathon, which has always been this ideal loop we have in our watershed, which is kind of a great race for anybody who, you know, is coming from roads and wants something, you know, trail with elevation, but not too technical. You know, it's not, it's a great transition race, but it's also a great race to, test yourself on and some late season fitness, what have you. A lot of guys come here and do it right before they go down to North Face, and I think it's a great training run as well. So, yeah, those are our three events at the moment. And, we think we put on a great events for what you get for the money and for where it is. I think they're top notch.
Pine to Palm registration at ultrasignup.com over January 1st is when the sign up for that.
Yeah.
Is it tough to get into a lottery or what are the chances of a runner getting in?
No, you can sign up now. We have a limit of 300, but last year we almost reached that, and this year I have a feeling we'll get there pretty quickly. So it's behoove you to sign up earlier. There's better deals on pricing. And as always, you know, one of the hardest things for race directors is dealing with and I know it's hard for the participant as well, but trying to plan around these races, not knowing how many people are going to be there and ordering supplies and getting aid station volunteers and everything else, you know, when you get an influx of people in the last month up to like 100 people, that's just wreaks havoc on a race director. And it's there for, at least for this race, that's still there. I don't know how much longer it will be as people start to fill up, but it's nice to be able to get in there and sign up for it and have people train for the event. I know all the things that trip people up and make that not happen, but the earlier you can sign up, always better.
Hal, thanks for your time. We had a great time chatting with you, and best of luck to you and your endeavors coming up in 2015. I know there's going to be something that you're going to take care of.
We'll link all the information to his book, his website, the
star,
film.
The star he has on Hollywood Lane or whatever that is.
Yes.
Good.
So Trail Runner Nation. Trail Runner Nation, thanks for joining us. Go to our website if you feel like it. It's pretty cool.
Actually, it's getting a revamp.
Yeah, we're revamping
it
right
revamping
now.
We're revamping the website, so
it's
keep
really
checking.
Cool. Yeah, awesome.
It's going to be super cool.
Yeah.
It's going to be very cool.
Now go out and run Moss.